Can you hear me? Thank you. Okay. Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled September 20th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session and we discussed public employee performance evaluation regarding the superintendent, and direction was given. One item of anticipated litigation was discussed, one item of existing litigation, and one item of negotiations, and direction was given to staff. The board is now in open session. Do we have consensus on the order of business? I see that we do. We're moving directly to public comment and then to the study session. Are there any members of the public here who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, we'll move to the study session on educational technology.
We're moving ourselves.
We're physically moving.
Let me take my cookies.
All we need is the pen, right? There's nothing to take.
Yeah. Isn't it cute? I love to do that. I can hear better.
The sea of dazzles from technology.
Yeah. If you see my eyes closed.
I'll bet you.
Well, good evening, Madam Chair and members of the board. We're here tonight at your request to share an overview of our instructional technology plan, assuring you that our students and teachers are utilizing technology as an instructional tool in the classroom, in our libraries, and in our labs. Our staff here tonight is prepared to talk a little bit about their instructional approach, how they teach our students information literacy skills, such as determining good and inaccurate information, and they plan to actually show you a common experience that all their students have in their classroom. I'd like to thank Diane Frost and Vicki Rayburn for hosting us here in their library tonight. A lot of work went into the setup, and we want to thank you very, very much. We have staff present tonight to share their approach to address the technology skills as they align to our core standards. We have Sharon Hout and Gordon Snapp from Baywood School. We have Diane Frost and Eric Jarvis from Los Osos Middle School. Liz Moore, Darylyn McCarthy from Morro Bay High School. Jan Fetcho and Cherie Jones from San Luis Obispo High School. We're also very fortunate to have grant support to support our technology program, and this helps with our professional development piece. Trish Scott has been instrumental in securing federal and state grants. She'll talk a little bit about our professional development that has occurred. And Cecil Johnson is here tonight to update you on a recent project that we're involved with this year with Pearson. We have an ambitious agenda, And we know that you want to see our students' real work and understand how our students progress through the grades and realize their technological skills.
Tech, the vendor, did a lot of the work in collaboration with our department and with BG&T as well. And Brad Parker provided a lot of leadership throughout the infrastructure piece of our summer projects because he has such wonderful experience with large construction projects. So I'll go on and tell you a little bit about what we did and accomplished, and my department, the folks in the department worked very hard and to try to meet the project goals for the infrastructure piece. And they're listed here for you. New servers were installed at each site. Lots of new switches, and many were also relocated. We had some existing switches that were in good shape, so we relocated those to the outer portions of the network and put all the new switches in the more core areas of our network. We also had almost 500 new PCs installed for our staff and students in primary areas in classrooms, labs, and libraries, as well as our grant, which provided laptops, our wireless laptops for the middle schools, and several PCs and printers as well. In addition to all of this hardware that went in, we had many upgrades to software that is key, that are key components of our district in terms of communication. That is one of the main goals of our superintendent, and communication skills and improving communications overall. So towards that goal, we upgraded our email system district-wide, our student information system, and the management system that allows us to manage about 2,200 PCs in our district at this point. And then we implemented a new printing protocol that improved also the routing for our switches, and our firewall security was improved recently with a new system called Checkpoint. And that was a quick overview of what happened, and I'd like to thank you, Dr. Valentine, and the board for the support you provided for us. So thank you. Thank you. They did a beautiful job. Very, very easy to work with, very well organized, good communication. We met with them regularly, Brad and I did, and we're rounding it out now, doing the final visual walkthroughs of all of the wiring closets where all the switches are located. They just completed the final checkoff on all the servers, so we're set to go. Thank you. And now I'd like to introduce our staff that will be talking about grades 4 through 6. Sharon Haupt and Gordon Snapp are going to be focusing on... Aren't you next? No? You're not coming up here? Okay. You're fine. Okay. They're going to focus on technology in the library, and you're welcome to use the microphone right there, and I can pull up the website for you if you'd like. Okay. And then Gordon will talk about a classroom experiences after Sharon.
Good evening. I'm Sharon Haupt, and I'm the Library Media Center technician at Baywood. And my understanding is that the board wanted to have a clear understanding of technology and information literacy. So I really wanted to start by giving you a definition of information literacy, which is that students know the skills necessary to locate, evaluate, and use information and ideas effectively for the project that they have at hand. So that's how we define information literacy. And at the elementary level, you have library media technicians collaborating with teachers that creates an information-rich and technology-rich environment that's accessible to all the students and staff. And all of them, elementary through secondary, have access to information from home and school 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they can do that through our school webpage and our card catalog. And you see up here the card catalog right there. And under quick links, they can have access to our webpage and to Kids Info Bits, which is, if you click the next one, Amelia, go ahead. The EdTech portal where they can have access. You can click, go ahead and type in BA for username and password as library. And they can then have access from home to our Thompson-Gale database, select database for resources for safe, secure, authoritative, reliable websites, websites and resources for research. So beginning in fourth grade, actually it happens much sooner than that, but it's at home and at school for doing their research. And then the basic technology skills that all kids 4th through 6th grade experience are file management, learning to save in the correct place in the correct format. And they learn keyboarding, but that's mostly in the 4th grade that they're doing their any keyboarding that they do. That they use basic searching skills with keywords and how to narrow and broaden that search. And then how to evaluate the website to make sure who the author is and what the URL means and what the .com, the .edu, what those different things mean and dates and looking for reliable information to make sure they have a proper website for their research. And so we do all that together.
Well, I don't have too much to add to that. I was supposed to bring an example of how we bring the library experience into the classroom. Primarily, what I want to talk about is research, because we, you know, in the library, one of the things that we learn is research skills. And so we use the technology to further that and also to present and publish the results of that research. That's one of the things we do. So in the course of learning about researching information, we teach the kids traditional sources like, you know, book encyclopedias and almanacs and atlases in the library, and then also show them internet resources. And we focus on the ones that are pre-selected and screened, that we know they are viable, they're good sources. But we also talk about the wide openness of the internet and how once you go out into the wide open internet, there's lots of sites that aren't so good. So we give them some skills and some things to look for, and trying to give some way to determine whether what they're looking at on the internet is a valuable resource or a sham. We also talk about acceptable use policies with the kids, so when we do let them on the internet, that they know what's allowed, what's not, what's acceptable use and what's not. And then the research goes into some kind of presentation that they have, which is the publication component of the writing process. Sometimes it's it could be their own personal narratives or fiction, but a lot of times the research is, like Sharon said, country reports or biographies. And I tend to do a lot with desktop what we used to call desktop publishing is kind of blended with word processing, but showing the kids how to format a presentation in various ways to make it more effective, to add graphics, columns, just different kinds of formatting things to make it seem more professional. I also teach PowerPoint presentations, so they know how to use a slide format that, you know, that is becoming pretty standard these days. I've taught web page authoring in the past and how to make a simple web page, although we keep those on our own local intranet. We don't put them out in the wide open anymore. And that's basically.
One of the things you mentioned was how to use a microphone appropriately. How do you help students, say, determine whether the information they're getting is an urban myth or, say, a peer-reviewed journal, not something peer-reviewed perhaps that your sixth graders would be interested in, but how do you help them determine truth versus lies on the internet?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that we have those sites that are already pre-screened, and there's enough there that they can find everything they need just on those. And then once they do, if they're at home or if they're, you know, Googling things
I think corroboration is a big thing, where you tell them, don't just trust one source, find two or three or four, and see if it corroborates with the encyclopedia that you have. So you can kind of tell that way. See if there's any information about who published it, if it's from a university or a school someplace. I mean, there's really no guarantees, because somebody could put up a sham site that would look like an authentic site. But I think in the real world, those are kind of few and far between. And if they're just careful and kind of corroborate with other places, I think they can get a pretty good idea that what they're seeing is valid.
No. Yeah, well, that's for any information need that students might have. So if it's for a project they're doing in Mr. Snap's class, or if it's for some research they're doing at home, I mean, it really is a foundation for lifelong learning.
And this definition goes to different levels, and you use the same definition.
So as I was saying, in the sixth grade, they can choose the exploratory wheel, which has the digital art class, which is computer-based but also brings in the social studies standards and also has an industrial technology component that is computer-based. In the seventh grade, part of our wheel, also a possibility for our seventh grade students to take, is a technology class. I've asked Mr. Jarvis to come tonight. He is our webmaster on campus, so he designs the Los Osos Middle School webpage, but he's also the technology teacher and coordinates our technology program.
I'll start off with the technology class. All students in the elective wheel take the computer class, and in this class they learn the advanced skills of Microsoft Word, how to set the columns, how to correctly use the tabs, how never again, when you're doing a works cited or annotated bibliography, do you have to bang the space bar to get everything set just right? You set your tabs correctly. I know we've all done that, right? We're trying to get that just right, just so. Never again when you have a paper that you have to have a table of contents, are you banging the have you done that? Banging the period all the way across the page and then trying to get the numbers to line up. They set the tabs to do that correctly, and I've consulted with Mrs. Rayburn on the correct formats for that, and along with the Works Cited page. So they move on to spreadsheets, and they use graphs and charts. And I noticed I had about one-fourth of the, before our most recent science fair, I had about one-fourth of the kids that completed the tech class. And it looked like about one-fourth of the science fair project had really nice Excel spread charts and graphs of their research they'd done on their science fair projects. When we move on, they use Microsoft Access, and they do queries, and they do form letters, and they do presentation software. We're doing a little bit of Movie Maker and web page design, a little bit of the PowerPoint as well. And all classes have access to United Streaming in the portal. So we have a growing number of teachers using United Streaming movies in their classroom rather than the old VCR. And we use our website for parent communication, which I'll show in just a second.
We have...
Okay. Yes. I believe we have the majority of our classrooms have what's called a scan converter that converts the computer signal into a video signal, and they can show it on the regular TV. Some use the projector screens as well, and then you get the big image. But many of the classrooms, at least the ones that are involved in the EETT grant, all the language arts and the science classes and math classes
and social studies
have it. So I can't say all of them, but I believe the majority have that capability.
You might want to explain what United Streaming is to the
uninitiated. Yeah, United Streaming is on the ETC portal is a collection of videos that have been pre-screened, and they're new videos. A lot of teachers here, sometimes you get this great sounding video, and it's really old. These are all pretty new videos that we subscribe to and can be shown. And they're a step beyond just watching the movie. They're more modern in that they stop in the middle and they have questions, and you can easily stop the video on the computer. It's much easier. And engage in those questions or engage in those discussion questions.
Excuse me, Mr. Jarvis. I've just been reminded that this is a regular board meeting, so that everyone who talks has to speak into a microphone because the video people are having a very hard time getting everything going.
Thank
so sorry
you.
To interrupt
it's
you,
okay.
but just for the
Thank
balance
you.
Of...
We have a number of exemplary practices on our campus that involve a teacher using standards through technology. In our geometry classroom, Mrs. Martin uses GeoSketchPad, which allows students to construct an object on the computer and then explore its mathematical properties. It's a wonderful opportunity. Mrs. Lane in art uses Painter Classic, which really mimics real-world paper, pencil, art tools, and the kids create products on the computer. She really considers it essential to any student who wants to go on to a career in graphics. Our science classes now have a laptop cart, and so we'll have computer-based labs coming up. And we also find that a lot of our English teachers will do major research projects that involve technology. And Mr. Jarvis has an example for you.
This is what a typical research project in our sixth grade classroom. And I was reminded once I was reading an article that someone was lamenting in an editorial that sometimes the video came up and sometimes it didn't, and this time it happened not to. But I'll go ahead and stop it there. The video didn't come up for some reason. It came up about a third of the time. I know we're having a little issue here, but it's beyond the research paper. They're putting a little bit of themselves into it. She went out in the backyard and she got the stick and she demonstrated how they discovered chimpanzees actually using tools and talked about it and edited it with Movie Maker and put it on the website. And there's at least as much writing in here as I'd get in my 10-page standard just paper. And in addition, what's required... What's required in our class is they have to do the standard works cited page, and they have to have plenty of sources. They have to be able to. One of the key ways I find it is the whether or not the research is quality research, or just some fly by night web page that they found is requiring them to do an annotated bibliography or works cited page, and usually if they can't fulfill the requirements of the works cited page, it's usually it's not a really good source. So, and I require lots of sites. We require lots of sites. We still use the books, and there's a few web pages as well, but they're from organizations such as this one. And I'll just real quickly, all students at our school do have access to a school web page, which communicates to all the parents. They can go and see it. Tomorrow we have a Paw Pat exchange and see what's going on. And we have a wonderful library page with the links to the ETC portal and other resources as well as our entire card catalog. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have Morrow Bay High School, I believe.
And this is Darlene McCartney from Morrow Bay High School. We put together some points about technology in our school, kind of an overview, and we gave it to the electronic media class, and they put together a video for you. So Amelia Well started. It's a five-minute video, and it covers everything that we wanted to say.
Presentation of technology at NBHS.
Hi, I'm April Shores, co-editor of Climax. We use technology to produce our school newspaper and news.
Using the ETC portal, Blackboard website, resources. Students and
as well as a variety of software. The FBHO website is used to communicate with students, parents, and teachers. It has the bulletin, sports schedule, teachers' homework pages, the student handbook, and counselor resources.
Communication through the web. Access to information. Available resources.
they were in kindergarten. There's been no formal adoption process in the business department since 1996. However, we're doing better this year with the influx of the funds that the board gave to the schools for technology. We were also able to update the computer applications course, and so it's now based on the latest Word, the latest Microsoft products. So that course is completely up to date. We're in good shape now, but we always need to look 3 years down the line. It takes 2 years to approve a new course. In 3 years, there'll be a different product up. It's always a challenge. In other departments around campus, many, many teachers in virtually every subject require word process documents of various types, web searches, spreadsheets for graphs and interpreting data. PowerPoint presentations are used everywhere by teachers and students. Teachers have websites. Many teachers use Blackboard Portal, which you've heard several people talk about. Maybe you can take them to yours.
I'd like to see that, if you're interested. Yeah, well,
I am.
I don't know about other board members. Because these things, I guess I kind of know what you mean, and by group-wise, I guess I kind of know what you mean, but I don't work with it, so if you could help us with that.
Okay. And there's databases of information, like you saw at the library sites, and a variety of other software programs that have been approved for curricular use. Our art department teaches a course called Electronic Media. You saw some stuff from Morro Bay. You're going to see some stuff from San Luis High. They would like to include more computer time for the beginning art students, but they're very challenged with that because the only computers with the art tools, like Photoshop, the only computers that have those on them are also used for my programming classes and for the presentation classes. They're committed 15 out of 15 periods of the year, so there's no time for any of the art classes to come in. Computer lab time is a big issue. Thank you. Question? Yes?
Thank you. Just in terms of what the board can do to support, because you may not have all of us together again, when you're talking about the overlap between the art and the business classes, how many computers are we talking about that would free that up?
The number of computers in a standard lab at a high school is 36. One for the teacher, 35 for the students. But the biggest problem with these labs is not the computers, it's the software component, because these particular software packages are very, very expensive, almost as expensive as the computers themselves.
And the way it's done now, the license programs are on one set of computers, but
yes,
if there was another set, you couldn't move them over?
The publishing classes and the art classes use some of the same programs. Perhaps it could be freed up by the programming classes moving to a different lab.
Okay.
I'd like to introduce Cherie Jones, and she's been showing some of her stuff.
Thank you. Being a visual art teacher, I have a visual to share with you. I am the electronic media teacher at San Luis High School. And I just want to say just a few things about the class so you kind of have a clear understanding of what we do. It's an ROP, electronic media class, meaning it's a regional opportunity program. It's a vocational program, but it's also a fine art class also. So being that it focuses on digital photography, video editing as a vocational career avenue and as a fine art. It's a two-trimester course, which we cover core standards that are implemented through historical and current event research utilizing the Blackboard. And I can show you, if we have time, I can share that with you. We also study core standards through script writing, storyboarding, and conceptual analysis of photography and video filmmaking. Currently, we have two full sections at SLO High School. And electronic media has become a feeder course into the virtual enterprise yearbook and the associated student body because they're learning skills that they can take into those programs. Students who have these skills become an asset to any workplace or college program through the multimedia experience. I have with me tonight the culminating project at the end of the two trimesters. It's a video project that will incorporate digital photography, animation, filmmaking, video editing. The first one is a silent film that won an award at the International Student Film Festival in...
Thank you.
see the Blackboard? Did you see a demonstration of that?
Mary's
here.
Sure, we're at like about 8 o'clock, so we have a couple more people to present.
Okay. So it's going to take a long time to do it.
No.
I'm just curious what it is.
Show you a short order over there, or I can show the whole group if you want to this time. Okay, this is the ROP electronic website. We are solely paperless, so the whole class is on this website. It's run by Slocum. And this is the opening page. I have my it's the announcement page. I post important things on the announcement page. And over on the left here, we have all different, for instance, course information, my acceptable use policy, the ROP, media competencies. I have information on the next one about myself and my background and courses that I teach and course documents. I have files on Photoshop, how to compose photographs, digital camera functions, and then I have my assignments. And I have first trimester and second trimester. Here's our discussion board where they can go on and post articles. For instance, a lot of them are from the New York Times for events. They go on to the discussion board. I post questions for them to answer, and then they have to make a response to someone else's opinion on the discussion board. I also post my digital camera assignments and my Photoshop assignments there also. Discussion boards, actually I have them split up in groups, but I also have external links, and I've got them organized by web resources, photography links, design and layout, and video resources. So these are links to the internet where I might refer them depending on what project we're working on. And in tools, we also have tasks where I have everything that we've done so far this trimester that they, you know, have to keep track of. I have my due dates, and it's kind of like a little log that they can go in and, you know, let me know if they're started, because they can mark the status if it was completed or in progress or anything like that. So I can kind of go in and look at, see what they're doing and if they're keeping up with it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you
for
showing us that. So, Cecil, would you like to just share your project work, please, with the group?
You bet. Good evening. My name is Cecil Johnson, and I am currently a teacher on special assignments with San Luis Coastal. I, along with our district, have been given a unique opportunity this year, and they've asked me to share that with you. Through funding provided by the Pearson Foundation, I am working in district classrooms to help students produce digital films. The process is called digital storytelling. Before taking you through the steps involved in this process, I'd like to put those steps in context by sharing a short segment from a student-produced film. The digital movie was made last year in a fifth-grade classroom at Los Ranchos Elementary School.
How can you find the team direction? Wind speed is how fast wind travels above the earth. One of the instruments used to measure wind speed is an anemometer. The anemometer is used to measure wind speed and direction. It works by spinning around and around. The faster the anemometer spins, the faster the wind is blowing. This is an anemometer. Anemometers are great tools to measure wind speed. This is how it works. When the wind blows on the anemometer, it makes the cup spin. However fast the anemometer spins is how fast the wind is blowing.
As I said earlier, the digital storytelling project is being brought to our district in conjunction with the Pearson Foundation. Pearson Foundation is the philanthropic offshoot from the larger publication, Pearson Publications. Digital storytelling is a process. It's a process that integrates technology into a curriculum-based unit of instruction. Digital films are produced as the final artifact to show evidence of student learning. Classroom residencies will be implemented this year through the 2005-2006 school year, The residencies are going to take place at participating classroom school sites. This process of digital storytelling gives teachers and students a way to integrate technology into the curriculum in a meaningful way. In the process, technology is not treated as in addition to the curriculum, but rather as a part of it. All of the necessary hardware and software for these residencies will be provided by the Pearson Foundation. I, too, am provided by the Pearson Foundation. I work with teachers in the weeks prior to the residency to support and assist with the integration, and then I conduct the classroom residencies. The project is designed in four stages. Stage one is training. During the summer, participating teachers were involved in a two-day workshop that introduced them to the hardware and the software. They learned the integration process, reviewed materials for successful integration, and were given time to write a unit of instruction that integrates a digital classroom using seven steps. Step one, the teacher teaches the curriculum. The teacher delivers the content and skills necessary for the students to learn. Step two, students research. Selected topics are explored in depth through additional readings, web research, and other activities. Students gather source citations as they do the research. Step three, students write narratives. Narrative writing skills are used to develop a narration that sits at the heart of the film. Step four, students create storyboards. This is where students marry keywords and phrases to the visual imagery. Step five, students collect assets. Assets will include still images, video footage, and audio. Step six, students produce and edit films. The narrative writing is combined with the assets to create a film using Adobe Premiere Pro. Step seven, post-production of student films. I spoke to this earlier. Residency facilitators complete the process by putting final touches on the films for formatting them to mini CDs. We must take every opportunity to bring technology to our students in a meaningful way. Digital storytelling does that, but it does more than that. It empowers teachers to integrate technology into the curriculum in a way that makes sense and is safe. It opens a door for many that might otherwise remain closed. Each stage of the project is designed to support teachers as they integrate technology into a standards-based curriculum in a rapidly changing educational arena. Thank you.
Thank you, while she's coming at me, I just asked Cecil, how long do you anticipate that this special assignment will last with the funds from Pearson?
We're funded for the year. That's all I can say right now.
Okay. Any chance you can make that ongoing?
I don't know about ongoing, but there have been discussions about doing it a second year and actually trying to build upon what we do this year.
Are you going to get to all the school sites, all the elementary schools?
I will not be at every school site. Teachers were given the opportunity to sign up for the workshops over the summer. I'm currently slated in 23 elementary school classrooms. We're actually exploring down as low as a third grade at Del Mar, but that will include that will be with Movie Maker as opposed to Adobe Premiere Pro, which is a more high-end piece of software. So. We're looking at third through sixth grade right now, and there's some support being offered at the middle schools as well for teachers who want to create films using Movie Maker with their students. Then I am a support person for them, and I will help them in any way possible to integrate it into their curriculum, and then also as technical support to be with them while the movies are being made.
Okay. It's very exciting because you're helping the kids, but you're also helping the other teachers to become comfortable, and so I hope you're able to extend it, and I hope you will talk to the district if there's any need for any support for it.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Patricia Scott. I'm the teacher on special assignment for educational technology. I started with the district 4 years ago, a little more than 4 years ago. I'm going to address professional development. Is it on?
These are the areas of professional development I'm going to address. The California Technology Assistant Project, Enhancing Education Through Technology Grant Program, the Library Technology Training, Targeted Training, which is site-based, and Educational Technology Center Portal Training. California Technology Assistant Project, most people hear me call it CTAP, and a lot of people are tired of hearing CTAP because we're really involved with CTAP, but we're kind of moving away from it, and here's why. CTAP's really designed in the professional development to bring existing teachers up to the level that new teachers need to be at. So it is aligned to standards 9 and 16 of the credentialing program. And so we now have 75% of our teachers at level 1. That's all the basic proficiency, email, word processing, using the internet. 20% are at level 2. That's where they're integrating technology into the classroom. And that doesn't reflect how many are integrating technology in the classroom, obviously. You've seen a lot here today. It just reflects those that have certificates at this point. 4% of our teachers are at level 3, and level 3 is a trainer level. And Sharon Houth is one of our trainers, so more than teachers are trainers. And the level 3 mentors, they come. And that, again, is why Pearson was a priority, and CTAP level 2 is our priority.
Is that, I don't know where I need that, is that where it becomes the most difficult for the classroom teacher, is that taking all their... That's where it's the most difficult, where they take the training for these various levels and then they have to make something happen in the classroom?
Yes. It does take time. I mean, because think of yourself learning a new program and then trying to teach it to someone else. Not only just one other person, but try teaching it to 35 people and standing in front of them and, you know, making sure everything works right and being confident to do that. That does take some support. It takes technical support. It takes equipment. It takes people like Cecil and myself and the level 3 mentors in the district. Our library staff has been real supportive. And teachers helping teachers. There's a lot of effort going in for that.
Let me make sure I understand what that 72% figure meant. It's really the teacher bringing technology to the students in the class.
It's the teachers who want training to integrate technology.
For them to use technology to present various curriculums to the students. Okay, good.
Yeah, that's the demand we have. That's why all the funds are already spent for this year, and we just started. Because people are demanding training. They want to be trained.
Okay, thank you.
The EETT grant program for middle schools is, it was a competitive grant. The total, as you see, was $424,000 over 2 years, and 25% of that had to be spent on training. We spent about 29% on training, at least. And that doesn't even seem like enough with the much training. Like, our year one people still wanted more training. Our year two people are very excited. They can't wait to get started. But year one was a focus on English, language arts, and history, social science. And we worked with those teachers. Los Osos Middle School received more equipment than Laguna. So Laguna started training right away because they had the equipment in place. So they started right away in September. They averaged about every other week they met. We have a lead teacher who goes into the classroom for support. They have a release period that the grant pays for. And they're there, they phone call away, they walk in the classroom, they help them teach a lesson, they're there for support, and that's been one of the most effective aspects of the grant. Year two, we already have the technology in place, and so we're getting started on training. That should be starting pretty quick. Thanks to Leah and her crew getting a lot of work done this summer. We have 3 laptop carts. We have 2 at Laguna Middle School, and we have 1 at Los Osos. Those are brought right in the classroom, and they're wireless. They're stuck right on the desk. The students are very excited. They're used constantly, really in high demand. So it's been a pretty good thing. Do you have any questions about that?
Are we keeping the laptops in the carts up and available and...
Yes.
Even though they're in the hands of the students on the...
Yes, they've set up a checkout system at Laguna. Los Osos is, theirs is focused on science, So I'm not sure they have the same checkout system.
We're actually still working on the system.
Yeah, so it's just getting rolling here. But Laguna, they did have to devise a checkout system because they were in such high demand. They even split up the laptops. Someone takes three or four, and someone takes three or four. And so they've devised a lot of creative ways to always keep those in use.
Regarding the 72% of teachers who want more training, it sounds like this year's tied up, but Lucia Moore had a really good model for providing that, where they had Susie Minos, a teacher on special assignment. You may know her.
Yes, I do.
And on Monday afternoons, there were workshops offered every Monday on things like digital photography or United Streaming, any of the things that teachers want to know about PowerPoint. And teachers could sign up for the They have this great menu all year and sign up. Every three workshops they went to would equal a day's pay or credit. So it was very flexible, and they signed up for the things they were interested in and would come. And it was so many teachers participated in it. I just think it's a nice model to look at for some year.
I used to use the buyback days. I haven't been allowed to use buyback days last year, or I haven't heard about this year. But I used to use buyback days a lot. So
now, I don't know the term buyback day.
That's what she's using is buyback days. You attend three sessions, you get a buyback day. And I used to use that funding a lot for technology training. But last year I wasn't able to use it.
Well, I don't know
all
about
I
that
had
project,
I spent on.
It does get a lot of teachers used it and learned a lot of techniques.
Amelia mentioned earlier, and I think I have this number right, 2,200 laptops were bought for the district-wide use.
We're big with collaboration with Vicki Rayburn at Los Osos and Mary Spidell at Laguna Middle School. They helped teachers, and they collaborated on assignments that used the library and the classroom and worked together. There was an increase in home-to-school communication. I know last fall at Laguna's back-to-school night, four EETT teachers had websites up, and were handing out their web address, and then everybody wanted one. And now it's 100%. Even the second-year teachers already have their websites completed. And I think Los Osos is pretty roots right there at 100%, and those that aren't, we're going to be working on that first thing. But so there's a lot of web pages for teachers. It's been a big deal. Our goal was not even to have 100%, and we have reached way above that goal. Email is increased use of email. That's been one of the requirements. We use that a lot in communication. And then the library connection, like I said, the support from Vicki and Mary has been fantastic. They also attend all the training, and they attend the digital arts training too. The library technology meetings is another form of training. This is just a regular monthly meeting. Actually, last year I tried to do quarterly meetings, but it didn't really work out that way. I pretty much did the equivalent of monthly meetings. Basically, for the last 4 years, I've trained library techs on every single program. We put together how-to books, and the result is all of them are CTEP level. About 70% are CTEP level 2, and 45% of our library technicians are CTEP level 3 mentors. So our library technicians at the elementary level have been doing some training, and they also do troubleshooting and a lot more beyond the call of duty. And this year we're going to be working on technology integration, and basically we're going to take the lessons that they've collaborated with teachers on or that they've come up with themselves and start to put together, you know, district-wide lessons that we can use. The district shift from offering a menu of training to working with sites to address site needs. We did offer a menu of training 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Honestly, they were not well attended. Even with the offer of buyback days and pay, they were not attended, and several were canceled. So we shifted it into working with sites. And the ideal part about working with sites is you get every teacher in the site together. So they collaborate together. They work together, they learn together, and it's a real bonding process. And they have support networks set up now that they've worked together. One of the things you asked you were amazed that elementary students were using PowerPoint. And I had a group of second and third grade teachers, five of them at one site, that did PowerPoint projects together. So, and I know a kindergarten teacher who's used PowerPoint. So it goes way down the grade level. The site-based training has also been real effective with principal support. And, you know, we can address their specific needs at their site. Unfortunately, with the font shrinkage, it's hard to offer as much as we used to offer. I know one year, I think we did 150 sessions. So there's only 183 days in the school year. So we were really doing a lot more than right now. The focus is on the middle school, EETT, professional development. That's where some money is. So we're focusing there. Pearson Digital Arts, the formula EETT, that's a district-wide formula amount. It was a non-competitive grant based on us having a state-approved technology plan. That money was spent to support Pearson Digital Arts. And basically, at this point, unless they get buyback days back, then that's our staff development for pay. So Pearson meets the need to help for integrating technology, as teachers indicated on the TCAP survey. So that's why it was supported with our funds.
Now, those classes at Cal Poly for teachers in training, the technology classes that they all have to take now, I think they end up with level two.
Right.
With current credentials.
That's why CTAP's for existing teachers. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of Cal Poly students give credit in college for the class they took with me. So my class is the equivalent of the college.
Well, I took one of those and have level two, but can teachers take those in the summer? I mean, does anybody know the Cal Poly schedule? And is there any, so they would probably pay their own tuition to go to those, or maybe it's community extension or something. But is there any incentive on the district financially or whatever for people to have level two?
We don't have a district incentive.
Well, if they take it with the district, they're offered pay for their time in taking the class.
Okay.
And they gain the skills. Within an hour, I think I set up a couple of teachers at Los Osos with the Blackboard site that they had ready to go for the first day of school. But, you know, it does take time to learn all the little ins and outs and make use of all the things. But I know there are teachers that are doing online quizzes on them. They have all their work on them. Because I've been getting a lot of phone calls. You know, if there's ever a problem with the portal, I'm the first to find out. You know, I get an email, I get a phone call, and it's like, so it's kind of nice. That's when I get to talk to them. Oh, you know, that's when I find out what they're doing. But Blackboard is used at Cal Poly and at Quinta. It's used at a lot of universities, and it's similar to other programs like WebCT and all the others that are used at university levels. So it really helps our students to have that exposure. Thompson Gale, the research tool, I know that was addressed by a lot of people. And that's been a really exciting addition to the portal. It was added last year, and it helped us save about $12,000, I think, at least, district-wide. Digital Math is an online tutorial that has videos for students who need a tutor. It's actual certified teachers that are teaching different problems, how to work it. They work the whole problem out. The really nice thing about it is students can take an assessment, and if they miss a problem, they know automatically, they can watch the video on how to work that problem. So it's a real nice tool for home use. I don't know how many teachers are using it in the classroom right now, but one of the problems we had was we needed the right version of QuickTime, and now that we have all these new computers, that's working really well. United Streaming is another one that's really picking up use. Teachers are using that a lot at all levels, and I know they use that in the libraries, and it's been pretty popular. The media checkout, we have unlimited video checkout through the county, and you can do that online. So you can search their catalog and check out the video. And now they have a standards match where you can look for a video that matches standards. ABC Clio is targeted to history, geography, and the secondary level. And it's a subscription that's given to all our teachers of the appropriate courses, and it links to the textbooks and primary sources and a lot of internet sites. There's a lot of curriculum materials now available on the portal and professional resources.
Can I just, before I turn the microphone over to anybody else, I just want to say I appreciate the feedback from both Cecil and Trish about what you teachers on special assignments do, because for the board, we're always a little curious about what those teachers on special assignments are doing out there, and it's good for us to see that it's directly relevant, important work that goes right to the classroom for teachers and students.
Well, can I just say professional development is one aspect of what I do. There are a lot of other things involved.
Keep it up.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank all the presenters tonight, and now we'd like to open up to questions and answers. It did run a little bit longer than we thought it would, but there's people in the audience as well that are here to help us answer any questions that the board might have on this topic, so we want to make sure that you have a chance to ask what you need to ask.
Realizing that the hour's late, I do have a couple of questions and some comments. First, I appreciate all the emails that I've been seeing from GroupWise from Amelia about the updates that we've been doing. How are we doing on the support in the classrooms when computers break down? Because I know that's an issue for a lot of teachers. I know that we did go ahead and hire another technician. Have our response times come down, and are we seeing better results with that?
We certainly are. The number of work orders have dramatically decreased this fall with the additional temporary help that we've had over the summer to kind of hit the ground running when school started. And we're getting ready to hire two additional permanent positions, so that's going to be a tremendous help. We also have a helpline now, so that teachers can call from 7:30 to 4 daily and get immediate assistance over the phone with technical issues that they're experiencing. So that has been, I think, a tremendous help for our library techs and some of the on-site people that try to get out to the classrooms. This way a teacher can get immediate help, and even if the teacher doesn't need it at that moment, it's just kind of nice to know that help's available on the spot. And we have a rotating schedule, as we always have with our techs as well. So I don't think we could have implemented the helpline if we didn't have the additional assistance, and we do appreciate you approving that. That's great. Thank you.
And I guess a comment I'd like to make and an observation that I have. When we started this discussion, I believe it was in the year 2000, we talked about the idea of a computer applications class. Those of you who were on the board at the time may remember that I was opposed to that particular class. Dr. Olker in particular might remember that. My comment at the time was that I wanted to see things that have been done throughout what we hope are students' education from first to high school. I think that we need to relook at this class, not necessarily we the board, but I would like to see the computer applications class revisited, and I'd like to see the curriculum revisited for that class so that it's made more relevant. What I'm hearing is for kids that are making it to the higher level computer applications classes, the art classes, the technology classes, your virtual enterprise class, they're able to take these things and they're able to really expand them and look at them in a way that benefits them going into college, going into the world of work. Again, when I look at this class, I'm not convinced that we're achieving that process other than what we're seeing other than what we have had kids learn in the past. And as a Morro Bay parent, I'm especially concerned about this because of the lack of availability of electives for our Morro Bay students. When we're talking about a six-period day, fewer elective opportunities for students, and when a student is on the college track, the electives wind up becoming foreign language. So I'm real sensitive to that and the need for electives at Morro Bay High School. If we're going to have a class like this, I want to make sure that it's relevant, and I want to make sure that it's relevant for all students. So I would invite discussion on this, and I would like to see, is this class, in fact, achieving what we want it to achieve and achieving the levels that we want our students to have when they graduate from our high schools?
Speaking as a teacher in special education, and I don't know if all the kids have to take this class or if they can say that they've reached this.
They can
test out. Okay. I think it's important to have a basic class like this because there are students, in spite of all the wonderful opportunities, who make it to high school who don't have computer skills for whatever reason. just like they don't know how to read or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's kids who we need to catch them and have a basic class for them.
I just want to report as a spouse of an employee of the district who had a problem, used the helpline, and got on immediately, had the problem fixed. And the interesting new aspect, I think, and I assume that this is some sort of software that's come with the new computers, is that when she called the helpline, the tech was able to get on to her own computer, take over her computer, fix the problem, and then return control of her computer to her, which is part of the new, this is a new software.
Yes, this is our PC management system. It's called ZenWorks for Desktops that we purchased through Novell. Actually, it was initially purchased about 3 or 4 years ago, I believe, before I came to the district. But since the hardware was so old, we couldn't fully implement it until now. So now we've been able to fully implement it on all Windows 2000, Windows XP computers in our district, and that's one of the tremendous features that allows us to get right to the root of the problem immediately. So, thank you.
Amelia, how are we addressing the issue that Jan raised about looking 3 years down the road to make sure the apps programs are up to date?
Yes. I'll defer that question to Dr. Matakovich or Damian Barnett. That's more the curriculum side of things. Okay. Thank you.
Due to your support this previous year, we were able, with funding, to be able to support our computer applications course and upgrade it, revise it. So the summer program that your son experienced was the old version, and now we have the updated version, and we hope maybe with a little review.
I'd like to see what new and improved looks like.
Absolutely. Well, and these people are responsible.
Yeah. There you go.
These people are very dedicated to providing the best possible program for your children, and we appreciate the funding to be able to purchase the software and the materials to upgrade this program. This is the beginning course of a series of courses that Jan showed you. We have several courses that need to be looked into. We have the funding to address computer applications. We are happy to go forward and prioritize this along with our other areas to support. As you know, we have adoptions coming up in health, PE, history, social science, and science that are core areas that have been identified for us. And we just hope that we can, as we go through the process of identifying our resources, that we can best meet the needs of our kids. And we have a dedicated computer business department who's very interested in moving forward with other courses.
So we'll see in the budget building process. We'll see in the budget building process going.
All this new and updated, and at the end of 4 years, it becomes our property. So that's when they're old in the computer classes, but other classes it's fine. And they are on the fast track last year. They started working very, very industriously in taking some of the computer programs and had coordinated them with Questa, where if a student took it at Morro Bay or San Luis High on a coordinated program, they could get Questa credit plus high school credit and then move right into the Questa program the next year or the year after, so, and they, you know, have credit for what they took. So I think I just wanted to mention that because I'm the board representative to ROP, that they are doing a valiant job to try to keep the schools up to date. And so far, knock on wood, none of their budgets have been cut, which is remarkable.
I'd just like to say that one of the most encouraging things that I heard tonight was that 72% of the teachers need more training, and I guess that means that they want more training. And that's very encouraging because I could just imagine how difficult it is. There was a withdrawal of support through the Instructional Media Center when we made our cuts 3 years ago, and now I think, if I understand what was presented tonight, some of these supports through the portal can replace some of what was lost through the IMC or what's not as easy to get through the IMC. And with this kind of teaching support, and with 72% of the faculty willing to learn more and wanting to learn more, I just feel like we're on the right track. And, you know, we have to spend the money on the hardware, we have to spend the money on the software, but I'm just very happy to see that the teachers want us to spend the money on the training too, because I think that's key, otherwise none of it's going to work.
Yeah, in response to that, I just think I wanted to let you know that the Follett software, which wasn't really specified by name tonight, but that we use as our library management program, we are now able to, every library person is able to search for any book or any resource in the whole district. We have a union catalog, so we can go on and see what's at the IMC, what's at the high school, what's at the elementary school, and we can borrow books from each other much more readily instead of emailing or calling, hey, do you have a copy of this? So we're doing a lot more interlibrary loans now, and it's, you know, better use of the money, with money tied for new resources. So that's one of the advantages. Also, one of the things that I realized was overlooked tonight, and unless I had a lapse in hearing, was I don't think any career exploration at the high school level was mentioned, but I'm sure that there is career exploration going on at the high school level, and I don't know if they need, you know, new software or anything about what's going on there, but at our middle school, Los Osos, we have a career week, and I wrote a web-based curriculum last year in which every eighth grader spends 2 or 3 days searching careers and coming up with a couple of ideas and searching those ideas in depth. And then we have a culminating experience with our career fair where they interview individuals. And it's wonderful that there are so many great sites online now that we can direct them to and have a set unit for them to go through to find all these sites and explore. Again, I want to invite people at the break to come over to the computer alcove, and I will show you some of our needed things.
And I just wanted to comment, Vicki, that I'm really glad to hear that our library software is working, because as I remember a couple of years ago, we had some great difficulties implementing library software, and that's really nice news as well. So,
it's
good.
Working wonderfully.
Thank you for speaking to that. And also, I just want to point out, and I don't even know how it'll happen, but one of Dr. Valentine's goals and one of the board's goals is to have our students connect more with the world of work. And it just seems like there are so many of these things that are going to present opportunities for our students to get out and be of value to the business community and take back value to the school, because I would think that some of these kids are going to know things that can actually help the adults out in the community. So I hope that there's some kind of a bridge to the working world through this kind of learning that's going on in our schools.
So
I just wanted to say one thing, Mary Femi.
Sure.
I'm astounded at this top of those developments.
Well, what we have is an instructional materials plan where we prioritize what our needs are, and that through that plan, using all the resources available to us, we'll look forward to planning to presenting our multi-year plan, which includes software and textbooks and revised curriculum. The works, okay?
Thank you very much. I'll give it over to you if you'd like to bring it to a close, Dr. Medakovich.
Please, if I may, I just would like to thank David Barnett for the presentation together with the committed staff that we have around the table, and also the staff that is in the peanut gallery who are here to support their staff. And it's really a team effort that's going on here. We want to thank you for the support financially, but also consistently you're interested in what we do in the classroom, and these teachers have provided for you what actually is happening in our school district, and we just look forward to the future and doing better.
Thank you very much.
work month.
To their seats, please. Chris, I don't want to embarrass you by name. Okay. So we've completed our technology study session, and we are going back to the regular order of business, which would next be approval of the minutes. Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Mrs. Andreen, seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. Those in favor?
Aye. Wait a minute. I do have a correction.
Mrs. Botwin?
I don't want to pull this too hard.
Don't lose your skirt there.
I don't lose my skirt. Wait a
minute.
I think I've got it now. Thank you. Just don't cross your legs, Patty. You'll hit the wire. On page 3 at the bottom, and at the very bottom, and Kim, I may have said what you printed there, but I didn't. If I did say that, I didn't mean to. At the very bottom on page 3, it says that.
You put that in the minute.
So what?
Were you joking when you said that, Mrs. Botwin?
No, I was serious. I had just read it in the L.A. Times a week or so before. It said Mrs. Botwin noted that Governor Schwarzenegger's popularity in his hometown of Graz, Austria, also seems to have faded. And as they have, here's what I think I said, removed a museum dedicated to him from a gymnasium.
So it's a little bit. A museum dedicated
yes,
to him.
Yes, they had a museum
a
dedicated to him
inside a gymnasium.
In large section, yes, because he was an athlete and all the other things. So they had a large, and apparently he had donated heavily to that museum, but they had removed it, and they didn't say where. So I just thought that was about the time here that where his popularity poll was going. Anyway, that's otherwise. Other than that, I move that we pass the minutes.
Those in favor. Aye. Opposed? Minutes are passed. Correspondence. The board has received none to its knowledge. Okay. Reports by school staff, and tonight we do not have student representatives. Any staff reports? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Standard update, we have a declining popularity for the governor. We have an increasing support for the defeat of Proposition 76. The governor has come out in favor of...
So vote no on Proposition 75. I said that last week. I'm just repeating myself.
Thank you. Item 4 is a resolution. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. Every year we're required to examine the GAN limitation, the GAN limit calculation, and the limit on our ability to acquire revenues. In 1979, Paul GAN put a limitation on how much money the government could spend, and it was Proposition 4. It was a follow-up to Proposition 13 at the time. The limit on government spending applies not only to the state of California, but also to cities, counties, and special districts, as well as school districts and county offices of education. It is a required calculation, because what we calculate is our limit is folded into the state limit. It's a very complex, perhaps useless calculation, yet it's required by the law. And we have a recommendation for the board that we approve Resolution 030506 adopting the GAN limit calculations for fiscal year 0405 and the GAN limit estimated calculations for 0506.
I move approval of Resolution number 030506.
Is there any member of the public that wishes to speak to this resolution? Seeing none, approval is moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mrs. Andreen. It's a roll call vote.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Andreen?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Right.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Okay, we'll move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. Item 5, approval of unaudited year-end actual financial statements for 2004-2005. I'd like to pull that, please.
Okay.
6, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 7, approval of adjustments in pay rate for non-contract. You pulled that, Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Botwin? Sorry. Item 8, approval of student teaching agreement with Cal Poly. 9, acceptance of donations. 10, disposition of surplus property. 11, approval of purchase orders. 12, approval to pay board member's salary for permissible absence or alternate meeting.
I'll move approval of items 6 and 8 through 12, in spite of the fact that I would really like one of those surplus school buses.
Okay, and I'll second.
I'll second.
So moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that passes unanimously. I pulled 5.
So did I.
And so did you? Mm-hmm. Okay, do you want to go first or shall I?
I don't care.
Okay, well, I can go first. I had a question, Mr. Miller. I had several questions. And I was able to, they were quickly and ably answered by Kathy Hunter earlier this week. But then I got myself very confused, all on my own. And I believe that I understand now that Fund 25, the Capital Facilities Fund, the developer fees, those monies are restricted to be used only for growth, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Then Fund 35, the modernization monies, is for capital improvements.
Correct.
So I had one of my questions was, could the case be made that these, since we're not requiring a tremendous amount of modernization at this time, could the modernization monies conceivably be used for technology purposes, not for CPUs, but for things that are permanently attached?
Switches.
Yeah, for switches and servers and what have you.
And that's the general rule of how you would use that money. What we did with our last upgrade was we grabbed some of the funds that were in the developer's fees for the same purpose. You can use those if they're attached to the building. We did not go for the modernization funds because we still have 2 school sites that weren't modernized and will become eligible if they aren't already eligible. They're now eligible, and we may want to look at modernizing those funds. So we leave our modernization funds intact to supplement what the state would give us at the future point.
That would be PAC B check, $144. Revenue was received from both state and local sources in the amount of $29,220. There were no expenditures nor transfers out. This activity leaves an ending balance of $652,864. Now, if I understand correctly, that there was some the seed money, I guess, for that fund was Measure A money?
Yes.
Okay. And then the monies, the little money that dribbles in each year is from people who have been in arrears in their property taxes?
Yeah, two primary sources. One would be interest that we would earn on that money. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is that, 90% of the people pay their taxes on time and some percentage don't. And when the property changes hands or the county seizes it for non-payment of property taxes and sells it, then the agencies that are entitled to those monies receive them. And that's what you see here for the dribble-in amounts that you're talking about. And it's hard to predict. Like, if you look at the number $29,000 is received in 2004-05, some of that's interest and some of that is a substantial, in terms of the $29,000, a substantial receipt of delinquent taxes.
So I guess my question would be, what type of restrictions? Is that fund restricted?
No, only by board policy. Okay, so the tax overrides were created for specific purposes, and all of those specific purposes were achieved. Okay, so then you have surplus funds. The community presented its taxes for the purposes of improving the facilities of the schools. All of those specific purposes were achieved. Now you have $600,000 left over. Theoretically, the board can reprocess that money in some other manner if that's what it chooses to do.
Did you have any particular ideas in mind for how you thought that money might well be spent?
Well, it would be my recommendation, unless there is some overriding object, that we try to focus it in the facilities area. If you're interested in looking at that money for other purposes, perhaps we can brainstorm some issues, we can bring up some good ideas, we get back to discussing that piece of it, if that's the board's interest.
Or maybe we just let it ride for the time being. My interest was in understanding that fund, how the monies came to be in that fund, and for what purpose they were designated, or if they were restricted, in what way they were restricted.
They were left over, and they are accumulating from delinquent taxes and interest. To the extent that there is restrictions on this money, no. Okay, so clearly the interest that you earn is totally unrestricted. I'm not sure what the board feels about its obligation to be true to the nature of where that money came from, what it was supposed to be used for. But if you have an interest in it, or we end up deciding that might be a good source of money for fill in the blank, we might want to have that discussion and see what we could do. In the meantime, my personal feeling is that we have some upcoming facility needs, unknown at the moment, but I guarantee you there will be some, and this would provide us with that type of money to be able to accomplish future needs in the facilities area. We are not eligible for much money from the state except for the two school sites themselves. We've used up our eligibility within state programs, and we don't have any growth to acquire more eligibility, which is how you get your eligibility. So we're pretty much cut off from state funding for facilities issues. We have to be very concerned about where our money will come from as buildings need to be updated and things need to be taken care of, and roofs, floors, ceilings, whatever. So.
Okay, thank you. I think Caroline had her mic down.
You hit everything I had down here. I had it marked to ask. Thank you for doing that.
Okay.
You said restricted, one of them on the Capital Facilities Fund, developer fees.
Yes.
You said it's restricted for only for growth. Aren't there parameters in there that different kinds of growth and different? Aren't there ways that that's over $4 million? of course, if we could end up talking about a new school, if we should have to build it, whatever, that would be a drop. more than a drop in a bucket, but could you send us information, explicit information in a Friday packet on what exactly, you know, any areas in there that we could wiggle worm?
Well, with this money, I don't think you want to wiggle worm. And the reason is it's very how we use that money.
Okay, thank you. And I also I agree that the tax override of $650,000 kind of leave it set in a little nest egg as we go down the road to see what's coming up. I like nest eggs. And this we've done a lot of stuff this year. Thank you.
Okay.
You had a question.
I was kind of just thinking about what you were saying about Fund 53. So a consideration for that might be as sort of an augmentation to the deferred maintenance. Is that more what you're thinking about?
It could be. It's a possibility. We're going to run into this maybe in 5 years, maybe in three, or maybe in seven, depending on climate and other conditions. Things are going to deteriorate. We have to have a source to go to, and these are three good funds for that. The one is restricted to growth issues, but the others are pretty much open for those kinds of uses.
Okay, I'll move to approve item five. Moved by myself, seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And then item seven, Mrs. Botwin.
For the information about the, I had some questions about the raise that we're giving, why the non-union employees, what's the difference here between the mandated and fee-based adult program, and the raise that we voted on last 2 weeks ago, that was for the mandated classes, is that correct? And they got a 2.7 raise. 2.75. And I appreciate the information you sent us in the Friday packet. What's the difference here? I'm looking at the instructor fee class doesn't change. Everybody else got raises. The certificated got 4%. The mandated class got 2.7. And what's the fee class situation?
Yeah, this was presented as a point of comparison. The fee-based classes is yet another funding source for adult ed, and essentially it deals with somebody who says, I'd like to teach a course on guitar, beginning guitar, and it's simply the hourly rate that we pay for those folks, and depending on whether we get enough students in the class determines whether we make money at that hourly rate or whether we don't make money with that hourly rate. It's not tied to the COLA, which we referred to in the update, which is what the mandated class teachers and funding is related to.
Much, Ed, but my interest here is they have to have a limit in order for the class to flow. Is that correct? And if they go significantly above the limit, is there any way, any step? Like if you get 10, you can have the class. If you get 17, you get an additional amount of money in your pay. If you hit 22, I mean, we do that in other cases. Why wouldn't we have something like that set up? I mean, what if a fee-based class had 25 people in it and all they needed was 10? They're still getting paid 24-something for 10 in that class or 25. It's a significant difference. Can we look at that maybe in a Friday packet or at some get some information on that? How many meet the minimum, how many go above it, to what extent, and maybe bring it back sometime, Madam Chair, if we could, to look at it in terms of do we want to make any adjustments or not. Okay? Thank you.
Can you provide some information?
Yeah, we can look into that. I would only add on that part of the explanation is going to be that adult education is an entrepreneurial kind of enterprise. And we have a going rate for teaching classes, and people teach it, and some classes are very profitable and some classes aren't.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I think Mrs. Botwin's bringing up the point that teaching a class like that is an entrepreneurial activity, too, and maybe you should recognize that part of it. I think it's a point that we could look at.
Thank you if you encourage them and you get the people to come, and they do because you do, then I think there should be rewards for that, as there are in all other aspects of life.
Well, let's begin with the Friday packet. And Dr. Valentine, I don't know what additional information you will be able to provide, but come up with something. Okay, and then we'll take it from there. And I'll second. So moved by Mrs. Andreen and seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that passes. The advance agenda.
Discussion of adequacy of supervision and so on and so on and so on. Those two, I think, are prime, and I only encourage a bit of a hustle on that, is that if we get through those and there's any changes, we can implement them as soon as possible. So I'd like to go on record as we... Thank you.
Okay, duly noted. I'm not sure why item 15 is here, but it... We'll note that we have received a copy of the Personnel Commission annual report for our information. Oh, I'm sorry. Please.
The mission statement's on for some time, and I think that our hurricane really reinforced the idea that none of us are self-sufficient, and I would still like to hear from the public and what they think about the mission statement. So just have that percolating in your minds about, read it over and see what you think. Because I think we are very interdependent, and we need to teach about that. Also, on the homework idea, we received something in the packet, and I think our policy and our regulations are really good. I like the part how teachers, they're not mandated to assign certain amount number of minutes of homework. It's up to their professional judgment how much to do. And I'm also interested in this area on feedback from families and parents, because homework does impact family life quite a bit sometimes, and I'm just curious if the way the policies and regulations are written is manifesting itself in what families consider to be appropriate levels and ways in their home lives. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that would happen, like a little survey and school newsletters, or I don't know how we would gather information about how families think homework is going, but I'm kind of curious about that. I don't think we need to change anything that we've written as a board or a district, but just how is it perceived? It would be interesting to me.
Okay, I'll support Mrs. Dickinson in trying to brainstorm a way that we can solicit feedback from parents as to how they're feeling about homework, their child's homework situation, how it's going. Yes.
I support you both. I'd like to have that feedback too. I can't find it. I brought along tonight, but a couple of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 or 6 years ago, the PTAs did do a survey and got a lot of responses from parents. And I wondered if, at this time, we could just at least talk about another generic type of survey going out to parents for asking for responses in terms of too much, too little, on target, off target, just to give us a feeling for the situation. Because there's quite a few teachers out there that give homework, especially in the junior high and the senior highs, every single class that kids go home. And I think... You know, when you're teaching a class, that class is, God Almighty, that class is the most important class in the world. Well, of course, teaching English, it is. I mean, there's no other class. But, and I think that you feel an obligation that you have to keep these kids right going up on top of things without due respect for the other things that are going on in their lives, the activities, the other homeworks, and so on. So the only way I can think of that we can do this is through the two high schools and junior high and the elementary PTAs, just to ask in appearance if you have a feeling, strong feeling, pro or con, just respond, and that we get that information and have a chance to look at it.
Mrs. Andreen?
Well, with all due respect, I think if you ask for that kind of input, you're only going to hear from the people that are dissatisfied, because I don't think anybody's going to, you know, go to a lot of trouble to tell you that they're getting the right amount of homework. And I think that the principals usually hear about it when there's a certain stage. At least I know I've talked to some principals where my daughters have been in school. And at certain stages and at certain times of the year and certain grades where there's a combination of classes all coming at once, I think they know. And it's more, you know, at different times throughout a child's career through our schools, I think they hit periods where the homework is intense. And my understanding is it usually kind of gets worked out at the site. But, you know, I'd like to know about it. I did talk to my daughter about our policy. I went over it with her, and I showed her the guidelines, you know, for each grade level in terms of what was supposed to be assigned at that level. And she and a friend were working on the homework
side of being a lazy high school student who never did his homework, but was successful nonetheless. However, I suspect that if we're going to be looking at homework, we probably ought to talk to not only the consumers in our schools, but also the recipients of our students who may or may not have expectation for the kind of work ethic and the kind of base knowledge that they would expect. And I'm referring now to Cuesta, Cal Poly, Harvard, or wherever you want to talk about it, because I think there's a certain expectation that students will come out of our schools with a knowledge and a work ethic, and I don't think we can walk by that.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, I think we can solicit information. I kind of like going to a smaller representative body than trying to glean information from thousands of people simultaneously. And part of the problem with gleaning from thousands of people simultaneously is that you wind up with a bunch of people who say it's too much and a bunch of people that say it's too little and a bunch of people that say it's pretty well all right. And you can get that from a smaller group. The notion of sites taking care of it, I think, is an important one, and that is that I know at the elementary level, and it's probably more of a problem at the secondary level, but at the elementary level, virtually every back-to-school night class that I have attended and watched has included teachers saying, and if you get to a place in the assignment where you've worked for a certain amount of time, just write me a note and tell me, you know, that's as far as I could get tonight. Or write me a note that something happened in your family and that this was not able, and we'll certainly work with you on that. I think it is in that spirit that homework problems get adjusted teacher by teacher and site by site. In the secondary level, it's problematic because units come and units go and culminating activities happen. Final exams all occur in the same week in high school. There's nothing that's going to change that, and kids who will do well will work very, very hard on five subjects, six subjects at a time. I think the feedback idea is good. I think we can go and get some representative feedback from people. When we get to the end of it, I'm not exactly sure that you're going to be sitting there and saying, I have a clear picture about what to do with homework.
I really agree, and I think we have so many pressing issues that we need to get to that I would prefer that unless, you know, we're having principals and teachers and students really coming to us with this concern, that we just assume this is a perennial thing from time to time. You know, they're gonna have a flare-up. But it's really not a matter that the board has to go into at this time, would be my feeling.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I think in my mind, it's almost the primary and young children that I'm more concerned about than high school. And some they're in schools for so many hours in such a young life, and they need time to play. And play is an important work of young children. So I think that's where I was coming from, and my concern was more for elementary children, really, that they have time to play and be creative and spend time with their families rather than working on more paperwork and pencils. So, and I think just the discussion that we've had is helpful, and so families will know they can talk to their teachers, their children's teachers and the principals, and work things out.
Okay, then, has this discussion satisfied your concern about homework and we don't need to survey? Okay. Oh, Mrs. Bowen.
The thing that came in our Friday packet. Ed, I want to thank you for the district enrollment history that you gave in the packet. Would you mind at some time in the future just running one of those sheets, like particularly the one that showed the numbers, along with, concurrent with the enrollment, I mean the demographic study we had done, because I think on the demographic study, if I remember correctly, it's around 07, 08, that we start a continual growth based on what they had at that time, just so we can look at it Friday study, because it looks like we're slowing in loss of students, and it'd be nice to see that a year or two down the road we might be growing. I'm sorry. I'm in a bad way tonight. Excuse me.
You're excused, Mrs. Botwin. reports by board members and administrators. Do we have any board reports?
Just before we go on the Personnel Commission,
yes.
we're receiving that report, and I just wanted to comment on it because we don't often get a chance to see the exact work that the person
of work that they do during the course of the year, and most of their work, as Patty said, they get so many people. They have 30 plus people listed here on page 15.6 who assist them in coming to the decisions that they make. So special thanks to all of you. It's nice to see that we work so well. Thank you.
Okay, so now are your mics down for board reports? Okay, I don't know who was down first. Mr. Unger?
I have several things that I'd just like to touch base on. First of all, I believe it was last week there was an article in the Tribune about the Avila property, and I just wanted to point out that the discussion of the Avila property has gone on for about a year and a half, almost close to 2 years, and I would like to remind the public that the proposal for the Avila property will generate approximately $66 million in funds for our students over the next 99 years, and I don't think that's anything that we can walk by, especially for those of us who were here 4 years ago, sat in front of crowds of probably up to 500 people closing schools and really seeing the pain that was caused by the state funding or lack of it at that time. Next thing I just want to talk about, it just kind of news from outside the bubble, as they say on Harry Shearer. There's the Los Angeles Times from last week. Kind of news from Elk Grove. A quote, Stephen Ladd, superintendent of Elk Grove, has long supported the Pledge of Allegiance as an appropriate patriotic exercise. Steve finds himself out of the frying pan and into the fire of the Pledge of Allegiance. We wish Steve well. I'm a member of the Tri-Counties Education Coalition, which is a coalition of educators, PTA, teachers, classified employees, school board members from throughout the Tri-Counties area, Ventura, Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo counties. We endeavor to put on educational presentations for people focusing on our students here in the Tri-Counties. And I'd like to point out that on Friday, October 7th, at the Goleta Union boardroom, we'll be having a talk by Pedro Nava, who is an assembly person from down in that area. We'll also be hearing from Rick Simpson on February 3rd about the state of the budget. He's the legislative analyst for the assembly speaker. And then on March 31st, we'll be hearing from educational groups. May we take our advocacy trip up to Sacramento. So I would invite everybody to come to this on the 7th at 10 a.m. down in Goleta. Something else, I feel like I'm one of the high school students here. Thursday, October 20th, please put that aside because that's going to be the Teacher of the Year dinner at the Madonna Inn.
And what's that day, please?
Thursday, October 20th, at the Garden Room at the Madonna Inn, we will be celebrating the Teachers of the Year. And, of course, we're honored here in our district to celebrate Diana Barnhart, who is County Teacher of the Year. So I would love to see everybody be able to attend the San Luis Obispo County School Board Association dinner on the 20th. And then just a couple of things. Doug Jennison was mentioned in the newspaper earlier this week to talk about the walking path that would run from Los Osos Middle School, where we are tonight, to Baywood School along El Morro Avenue here in Los Osos. And that's a great thing, and it'll help increase student safety. Doug pointed that out, and we're really glad that's going to be happening. And finally, I've been going to Morro Bay High School football games now for about the past 4 years. Everybody knows my son's in the band. And it really struck me, and it has been striking me, about what a community event football games are, especially in a small town like Los Osos and Morro Bay, where everybody gets together and everybody gets out and cheers the team, has a good time, really enjoys themselves. It's a true community event. And so I would invite everybody to go experience some high school football here, whether at Morro Bay High School or at San Luis High School. It's a great experience. For those of you who are interested in Morro Bay football, we're going to have a Saturday game this year. I believe it's at 1 o'clock, 1 or 2 o'clock this coming Saturday at Morro Bay High School. And a rare game, as one of my friends said, maybe I can go to a football game at Morro Bay and be warm. So I would invite everybody to come to that and really experience that because it's just great here.
Mrs. Dickinson.
As a mother of someone who played drums in the band, I know how fun that is. I went to the back-to-school night at Baywood. I understand it was the same night as Morro Bay High School, and I hope somebody went to Morro Bay High. I don't know who was there from our board. All righty, I figured. But it was great to be at the elementary school. I'm so impressed with parents. They just show up. They're so excited about, you know, the education of their children, and it's just heartwarming. And seeing what the teachers do is inspiring. And I know and the administrators. Mr. Jennison was there, even though his kids were.
Please.
I'll be quick. I want to thank our students and our teachers and those who publicized it in their school newsletters for all the help on Coastal Cleanup Day. Over 1,000 volunteers went to our beaches and picked up, on average, 4 pounds of trash apiece. So that's 2 tons of crud that's not on the beaches. And last year, they had about the same number of people, and I figure they worked hard both years. Last year, they got 10 pounds of crud per person. So I think it's working. I think there is actually a consciousness that when people throw things into the street, they end up going through the waterways and onto the beaches. And all the student newsletters that we got publicized it, and I know a lot of our kids were out there. And it's a great community service. We don't require community service in our district, but our kids live in a culture of community service, and I think the principals and teachers do a lot to promote that, and I thank them all.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine.
Thank you, and I just wanted to echo the appreciation that the board had expressed for the wonderful teaching staff of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We've gotten our testing results back, and I think we're seeing steady progress in our schools. I wanted to tonight, as we went around the table, technology is something that it's you really can't talk about technology without seeing what technology looks like and why it was so important to have the staff that we did have tonight sharing with you. And I just wanted to thank those folks who presented to us the outstanding work that they're doing. And, of course, as everybody is thanked around the table by Dr. Matakovich, I think it's very important that we also recognize the role that Dr. Matakovich plays in that. And I want to thank Mary publicly, too.
Now I will second your amendment to adjourn.
We are adjourned.